sound, the visitor's locker room door opened and Coach peered out, taking measure of the newcomers. After a long stare, he closed the door again.
"What's with him?"
Petey asked.
"No idea,"
I lied.
"I love what you've done with the place,"
McGarry said with a playful punch to my chest. He was a year behind Petey and me. Behind him was a guy we called JJ.
"What do you mean?"
I asked. McGarry raised his thick eyebrows.
"The banners?"
"What banners?" All three of them laughed.
"You'll see. I think the stands are going to be packed tonight, even though the semester hasn't started yet."
"Really?" That seemed unlikely.
"Too bad they're all going to see your team get smeared,"
JJ grinned.
"Smack talk much?"
I asked.
"The Harkness nerds have had a good run," McGarry said, "but it's over."
"Nice," I said. "After all the queer jokes I'm getting, you have to bring out the nerd jokes, too?"
"If the skate fits."
Petey gave me one more punch to the bicep.
"See you out there, but you ain't gonna win."
"We'll see," I smirked. Then I went back inside, feeling just a shred less anxious than I had before.
Graham. After the way I left things following our weird little visit in Vermont, Ricker and I weren't really speaking. Again, I was going to be eligible for Jackass of the Year for a second year running. So he didn't have a clue how tense I felt about this game. That was probably for the best. If I were him, I wouldn't want to know that my teammates were worried that he'd become a permanent liability. I finished applying some more orange tape to my stick, not that it helped the last time, just before Coach made his final speech.
"Time for a comeback, kids. Vermont has a strong team, so you're going to have to work for this, but you can do it. You have the chops, and you're coming off a rough couple of games, so you want this. Go take it. Grab it with both hands and bite its head off. Let's go."
Bella hauled open the ice door, and we ran down the chute in our skates, jumping the lip and hitting the ice. The visiting team was allowed exactly 90 seconds of warm-up, which we were all smart enough to use to the fullest. That's why it took me more than a few strokes down the rink before I noticed that there was something odd about the crowd. In the first place, they let out a whoop of excitement when we skated onto the ice. If this were a home game, that would be perfectly normal. But how many fans could we have this far from home? And the cheers and hollers did not let up. The clapping and stomping actually escalated as we skated, as if the Rolling Stones were due to follow us out for a command performance. Raising my head, I tried to make sense of it. The first thing I saw was a sea of color. Some of it was on the people. Quite a few of the fans were wearing... Were those rainbow hockey jerseys? What the fuck? I whizzed past the student section, which was full of Vermont's green and gold. No surprises there. But elsewhere, especially behind the visitors' net, spectators were holding giant rainbow banners. "Everyone can play," read one banner. "Bigotry is for sissy men," read another one. And "Welcome back to Vermont." Distracted, I stumbled and almost fell. Coach's whistle blew and we skated toward our bench, still craning my neck to read the signs. I passed a little kid wearing a sweatshirt reading, "Ricker is my hero." "What the fuck?" someone said, which was pretty much the same as my reaction.
"Ricker, would you be my hero too?"
another guy asked.
"Take a number,"
Ricker muttered. He looked dazed, his eyes darting around the arena.
"This is nuts,"
Bella said in a breathless voice. She pressed herself against the boards, taking pictures with her phone.
"Change of lineup," Coach bellowed. We all turned to listen. "Ricker's skating first line with Hartley and Trevi. Davies, you're on second. We have to give these fans what they came here to see."
Nobody argued. Not out loud, anyway. Ricker's expression was serious behind his face mask. I couldn't guess what he was thinking. Maybe his prayers were the same as mine. Let this not be another disaster. After Vermont's team got its own standing ovation, our first line was back in the ice, skating to a stop at our net. The announcer began introducing players, giving the name, class, hometown, and position of the Vermont first line. Each player skated to Vermont's blue line when his name was called, receiving applause. Then it was our turn. "From Etna, Connecticut, Harkness Senior and Team Captain, Adam Hartley." There was applause even for the competitor. This crowd was fired up tonight. "From Kent, Michigan, junior defenseman Michael Graham." I'd never admit it, but I liked hearing the announcer call my name. I skated to the blue line to polite applause. "And from Burlington, Vermont, sophomore forward John Ricker." The stands absolutely erupted then, with screams and the stomping of feet. I turn my head to see Ricker skate to the blue line, eyes wide, an embarrassed smirk on his face. Across the ice on the opposing line, I saw his high school friend roll his eyes and smile. The announcer had to pause before reading the last Harkness player's name because the crowd was screaming too loud for him to go on.
What planet are we on?
Trevi asked when he finally arrived beside me. No clue, I said, distracted by the relief coursing through me. The ice lights dimmed, and the announcer asked the crowd to stand for the national anthem. The spotlight went up on some dude who played it on the electric guitar, and the sound of it gave me chills. I didn't even have a name for the way I felt right now. All I knew was that this game would be different from the one against St. Bee's. Even if it was crazy and embarrassing to Ricker, the whole thing was awe-inspiring. There had to be 1,000 newly converted hockey fans in this place tonight. Tomorrow we would read on the news sites that a few drove from as far away as Toronto and Maryland to attend this game, just to show support for the first out gay Division I player. The place was crammed full of people who'd come to see a guy they didn't know play in a sport they might not understand. But they were all watching. As usual, I tried not to let my true feelings show in my face. But the whole thing was really freaking cool. Unfortunately, Coach had been right about one thing. Vermont wasn't going to give up the game easily. The first period was a big donut for both teams. Then in the second, Hartley got lucky with an ugly goal right in front of the net. But the pressure from Vermont redoubled, and it was a sweaty third period. Vermont scored, unfortunately, and with 5 minutes left on the clock, the tension on the bench was ridiculous. With just 3 minutes left, Ricker took a shot that looked awesome as it flew toward the net. The crowd flipped out, but Vermont's goalie scrambled, deflecting it with the very tip of his glove. That might have been the end of it, but while the crowd was still yelling over Ricker's near miss, Big D slapped that baby back into play, and Hartley tipped it behind the goalie and into the basket. From where I sat on the bench at that point, I couldn't even see it happen. I only knew from the screaming. From there, we ran down the clock and won it. 2-1. Ladies and gentlemen, we were back.
11. Lamplighter. January. Lamplighter. A goal. In pro hockey, a goal is signified by a red light on the goal itself or on the boards behind the goal. Ricker. After the Vermont game, we kept right on winning. In the middle of January, the college newspapers put out our stats on the front page in enormous type. 14 wins, 3 losses, 3 ties. Coach was all fired up. And now, when the guys from the Harkness press office showed up with a reporter in tow, it wasn't to talk about me. I'd been relegated to a single sentence at the bottom of these articles. Usually, the same team that welcomed gay left-wing John Ricker, blah, blah, blah. Tell us how it feels to be the winningest college team on the Eastern Seaboard, a sports writer had asked Hartley last week. It feels like hard work, Hartley told him. And that was true, but it was the best job ever. One pleasant side effect of all that success was that I didn't have time to feel lonely. Between school and hockey, all my hours were spoken for. I fell into bed like a dead man every night. Success also meant a lack of friction in the locker room. The fact that our win song played all the time helped to promote a live and let live vibe. The result was that the whole team inched up the Ricker scale, simply by default. They were too busy winning to snub me. Only one teammate was actively avoiding my eyes these days, and that was Graham, of course. He wasn't rude or anything, it's just that he seemed to always find a reason to walk out of a room if I walked into it. I don't know what I expected to happen after our strange little Vermont interlude, but if I'd thought we might be close again, it wasn't happening. I didn't like it, but I wasn't offended anymore, because I knew that Graham wasn't afraid of what I might do. These days, I was pretty sure that Graham was afraid of what Graham might do. The second weekend in January, we had only one game scheduled. To celebrate our Friday night off, Bella and I blew off the dining hall in favor of a cheap Chinese restaurant off campus. Together we ate General Tso's chicken and greasy fried rice. When the fortune cookies arrived, hers and mine had identical fortunes inside. What a scam, Bella sniffed. If they match, it feels as if my fortune is cheapened. It's a pretty good fortune, though, I pointed out. Our little paper slips had read, "True love awaits." I feel more optimistic whenever the lucky number on the back is 69. I laughed, of course. With Bella, you just had to. How's your sex life, Ricker? I sort of remember sex, though the details are fuzzy. Fortune cookie or not, I was never going to have a boyfriend if I didn't meet some available gay men. In theory, there were plenty of those at Harkness, but none of them spent 20 hours a week at the hockey rink. Bella made a wry face. There's a harsh irony. The team pervert gets no play. I know, right? I have to do the time, but I can't do the crime. She pointed to my fortune. Maybe you'll meet some cute boy soon. As it happens, my lucky number on here is 69, I said, waving the cookie slip. What? She jumped for it. That's not fair. Laughing, I held it out of her reach. I was only kidding, of course. The lucky number was 16, which did nothing for me. Bella's phone chimed and she read the text on it. Hmph, she said. I don't know whether to be flattered or insulted. Why? Graham is texting me. Hartley and his girlfriend are hanging out playing real sticks in his room. He invited me over, but he's also hoping I'll pick up a couple of six-packs on the way. What an ass. In spite of her protestations, after we left the restaurant, she cheerfully dragged me into the package store. That's what you call a liquor store in Connecticut for some reason. What shall we bring? Bella asked. I don't know. Am I coming with you? Sure you are. It's Friday night. Do you have a better offer? That would be no. Then choose an ale. I'll pick a lager. I bought a six of Switchback. Not only do I love that beer, but it's the stuff that Graham and I drank at Gorilla Night. The most immature part of me was hoping he'd remember. Bella led me to an entryway in the very beautiful Beaumont house. He's on the third floor, she said. We climbed up two flights of marble steps. There were four rooms and a bathroom on the third floor landing. Bella opened the left-hand door as if she owned the place. Hey, guys, she said, breezing in. We brought the goods. Awesome, Hartley said from where he sat cross-legged on the bed. Beside him, Graham looked up at us. When he saw that I'd come in with Bella, a flicker of confusion crossed his face. Good. Damn, this is a sweet room, Graham, I said. Thanks, he muttered. Graham had a generous single, with a big screen TV on the wall and a giant bed. There was even room enough for a beanbag chair in the corner, where Hartley's girlfriend Corey lounged, a video game controller in her hand. Hartley and Graham both sat the wrong way on the bed, propped up against the wall. Bella climbed on too, snuggling up to Graham's side. I wandered over to the desk where Graham's computer and a couple of speakers were playing his favorite tunes. He was halfway through a classic rock playlist. I decided to fuck with him a little. With a few taps of the keyboard, I switched to a list of dance music. Lady Gaga began to sing Bad Romance. Although Corey began to move her shoulders to the beat, Graham gave me a look of irritation. I just grinned at him, forcing him to look away. Perfect. I parked my butt on the floor next to Corey, who was battling it out in a game of real sticks against her boyfriend. There were only 10 seconds left in the game. When the buzzer sounded, Pittsburgh had beat the Bruins 3-2. Who's your team? I asked Corey. Did you just beat Hartley? Of course, she grinned. I always play Pittsburgh. Ask her why, Hartley said with a smirk. I gave Corey a sidelong glance. Maybe I don't need to. Pittsburgh is a great team, and the captain is the hottest dude in the NHL. Jesus, not you too, Hartley complained as I high-fived his laughing girlfriend. Corey put a hand over her heart. It's his boyish smile, you know, and he and I play well together, right, Hartley? You owe me $5. Beginner's luck, Hartley mumbled. Corey just smiled. Beginner's luck means something different to Hartley than the other people. I've been kicking his butt for a year and a half now.
Who's going to take on Graham's Red Wings? Hartley asked. Bella?
I'm more of a spectator, Bella said, even when it's on a screen.
Graham versus Rigger, then.
Hartley tossed me his controller. Without a word, Graham pulled up the menu on the screen. He dialed up the Red Wings versus the Bruins without asking me which team I wanted to play. But nobody seemed to notice except me. The Bruins were popular enough around these parts anyway. If I were, say, a Ducks fan and he knew that without asking, then tongues might wag. Hartley opened a beer for everybody. I took a slug of it before Graham started the game. Right from the first minute, it was a battle. He and I attacked each other's weaknesses like two people who had spent the better part of junior high matching wits. When we'd played that night in Vermont, I'd noticed that Graham had upped his game over the years, because he had it in his dorm room, obviously, not because his reflexes were better than mine. Even so, I was lucky enough to score the first goal today. As soon as the lamp lit, I glanced at him. Take that, G-Man. His gaze said, "Bite me, Ricker," and there was heat in it. The ref dropped the puck and we were at it again. I skated away with the puck, sending it flying between the net where I knew that Graham's slowest D-man would have to chase me, and the sharp elbows were out as the two of us battled it out. "Jesus, kids," Bella muttered. "You know this is your night off, right?" Around us, conversations were begun and ended. Corey left to go to her roommate's concert, and Orson arrived with a six-pack of Harpoon. Graham and I played all three periods of the game without handing it off to anyone else. I was up by one goal when the buzzer rang.
"I'm next," Orson said immediately. "Trade your harpoon for the controller."
"Deal." I handed Orson my controller but turned to look at Graham. His face was as sweaty as mine felt, and his expression said, "This ain't over." A couple of beers later, Graham broke out the scotch. He and I sipped wordlessly while Hartley battled Orson to a tie. Bella was engrossed in her phone the whole time. "I have to go," she said eventually, standing up. "Pepe's girlfriend dumped him, and I think he needs some comforting."
"Is that what we're calling it these days?"
Graham asked. Bella gave him an ornery look and shouldered her bag. "Good night, all," she said. I received a kiss on the cheek, and then she was gone. After Hartley beat Orson, Graham queued up another Red Wings versus Bruins game.
"Rematch," he said, his voice stiff.
"If you insist," I said. "It will only end the same way, dude."
"Arrogant," Graham grumbled.
"Slow reflexes," I returned. Orson laughed.
"Competitive much?"
"Good clean fun," I said, covering a smile. Poor Orson had no way of knowing that real sticks had once been our favorite form of foreplay. Shit. I really needed to get out of this room before too long. Just a few minutes more. But the game sucked me in, and when I looked up again, Hartley and Orson were gone. It was the middle of the third period of a scoreless game, and my mind snagged on the idea that I was sitting here with Graham, alone, at lonely o'clock. It was just enough distraction to be my undoing. Graham snuck around the net and scored on me.
"Fuck!"
I yelled, wiping my forehead.
"That's right. Patience is a virtue."
As the faux crowd went wild, I put the controller down. "Your game, dude. I should go."
"What? With 3 minutes on the clock? You just can't stand officially losing."
"Jackass." His face wore a teasing smile. The same one I used to see when we played video games alone 5 years ago. I really needed to get out of here. Graham kicked the controller with his bare foot, nudging it into my hip. Fine. 3 minutes. Then I was going to be history. The clock ticked down, leaving Graham and his Red Wings as the winners.
"Finally,"
he crowed, standing up to stretch.
"Okay, happy?"
I asked, getting up off the beanbag. I grabbed my shoes. I perched on the edge of his bed to put them on. I had just untangled the laces on the first one when my shoe disappeared from view, ripped from my hands by Graham. I raised my eyes, knowing exactly what I'd find there. Graham's face was flushed, and there was a lusty gleam in his eye. Fuck. When he looked at me like that, it was hard to breathe. Even so, I had a moment of absolute clarity. Here we go again. I chided myself even as he pushed my shoulders back onto the bed. I caught myself on my elbows, and time paused for the briefest speck of a moment. Then Graham closed his needy eyes, lowering himself onto me. And then his mouth landed on mine, hot and determined. I'm sure I grunted in disbelief, and maybe for 2 or 3 seconds I was too wary to let go. But he cupped my jaw, deepening the kiss. Then I opened for him, and that's all it took. The first real taste of him ruined me. As Graham began to take long pulls from my mouth, the kiss went wild. I shoved myself further up onto that bed, and he followed me in a rush, and then my arms were free to yank him closer. Fused at the mouth, we bumped and twisted on the bed. For a moment, I was on my side, jamming one of my legs between his. Then the world tilted and I found myself on my back, Graham's hot weight pressing me into the mattress. All the while, our limbs clamped graciously around each other. And we were kissing. Always kissing. We couldn't keep our mouths apart. In fact, Graham made a clumsy attempt to strip me of my shirt, but it was unsuccessful because he wouldn't release my mouth long enough to pull it over my face, and I wouldn't remove my hands from his ass long enough to help. I stroked him through the denim, my hands delving down his crease and as far down as I could reach, and he let out a monstrous groan. So I did it again with the same result, until he ground his dick against mine, then pulled up short, panting. "Strip," he demanded. "Are you sure that strip?" He pulled his shirt over his head. A second later, he yanked his jeans down, leaving absolutely nothing but miles of golden skin and jutting erection. Holy shit. Graham wanted to get naked with me, and I was going to let him. And it was going to end badly. I knew that already. The fact that Graham and I always ended badly was fucking written in the stars somewhere. But did that stop me? Nope. When it came to Graham, I could never keep my head on straight. And all the thinking I was doing meant that I wasn't moving fast enough for Graham, so he came after me. He dragged my jeans down off my legs, even yanking my socks off with them. I watched my underwear follow in his hands. And then we were skin to skin. He was on top again, devouring me. His dick scraped against mine, hard and ambitious. I began to feel greedy. At this rate, the whole encounter was going to reach its inevitable conclusion in the next couple of minutes. That wasn't okay with me. If I was going to make this mistake, I wanted to make it good. With a palm against Graham's shoulder, I gave him a shove, rolling him onto his side. His body felt so fucking good against mine. "Slow down," I urged, rubbing his sculpted pecs with my hand. "Can't," he said simply, leaning in for my mouth. We kissed again, softer this time. Trailing a hand down his body, I took us both in hand, pumping my palm against our parallel shafts. Graham gave a deep bellow of a groan, and just the sound alone took me to the edge. Stilling my hand, I took a deep breath. "Can I suck you?" His eyes squeezed shut at the very idea. But then he shook his head, and those cool eyes flipped back open. "No. I want you to fuck me." For a second, all I could do was blink back at him, wondering if he'd just said what I thought he just said. The request shocked me, almost as much as the fact that I was here with him in the first place. "It's been a long time coming," he said into the silence. "Don't make me beg." I cleared my throat. "Have you ever... only with toys?" Damn. I didn't know what to do, so I made a joke. "Gee, that's pretty pervy for a straight guy." Graham dropped his face into the pillow and smiled. I leaned over him, reaching for his bedside drawer. Right inside, I found what I was looking for. Lube and a condom. The second that Graham saw them, he rolled onto his stomach. Even before I had lubed up my fingers, he pushed his ass up off the bed. And when I finally reached my slicked fingertips over to caress him, he shuddered and groaned. My body was absolutely throbbing with expectation, but I still didn't know if I could go through with it. This was different than a kiss and a grope. If Graham freaked out after sex, I'd feel awful. Nervous, I began playing with him, and with my free hand I rubbed up and down his beautiful back. Leaning over, I worked kisses into the smooth skin at his waist and tried not to think too hard. My arms were full of this beautiful boy, and each time I pressed my lips against him, it felt like coming home. And all the while, Graham squirmed against my fingers, his greedy body asking for more. "Come on, man," he gasped. "Give it to me." "I don't want to hurt you," I said, my voice low. "Hurt me," he said, pushing back into my hand. I stretched my fingers inside him, rubbing up against his spot, and he moaned. "Oh, yeah. Do it." Jesus, fuck. It was the most erotic invitation I'd heard in my life, and I ached for him. But something still held me back. Graham was facing away from me, his eyes closed. "Hurt me," he'd demanded. It sounded as if Graham was trying to punish himself. I wanted him, but I wanted it to be real, not some twisted revenge fuck. "Turn over," I ordered, slapping his hip. "What? I think you're a tease, Rick." "I need to see your face," I whispered. With a frown, he turned that great body over, bending his knees to get around me. God, he was so gorgeous. I could have just stared at him for hours, all spread out in front of me, ready to be fucked. But he was still evading my eyes. Climbing on top of him, I took his face in hand, forcing him to look up at me. My thumb slid over his beautiful cheekbone, over his handsome jaw. "Look at me." When those cool blue eyes connected with mine, time slid to a stop. "Jesus, Rick," he whispered, his voice hoarse. Slowly, without breaking eye contact, I dropped my head for a very soft, very sensual kiss. I knew it was more intimacy than he could probably handle, but he held my gaze, blinking a little, but staying with me. His mouth softened into the kiss, and big hands wrapped around my ribs, holding me in place. I kissed him sweet and slow until he moaned, his legs wrapping over me to hold me close. "Good boy," I breathed. "Now spread for me." In a big hurry, he did exactly as told, and his eyes never left mine. Ever so slowly, I gave him exactly what he'd asked me for, and when he broke our gaze a while later, it was only because his eyes rolled back in his head on a shuddering gasp. That time, I wasn't offended at all. Afterward, I had never been so sated, and Graham felt it too. His body was relaxed to the point of bonelessness, as if I'd fucked all the tension out of him. Unlike the night of our tequila adventure, he didn't look like he wanted to bolt. True, we were in his room, so his options for bolting were more limited, but he didn't look panicked. In fact, he barely looked conscious. "It's a shame you didn't enjoy that at all," I teased him as he lazed in my arms. "Smug much?" he asked, grinning without opening his eyes. "I am covered in jizz." "I know, isn't it great?" I kissed the place where his neck met his shoulder. "I'm sorry, Rick," he said then, and I thought he might tell me to leave, except his hands were running up and down my body as he said it, so maybe not. "What are you sorry for?" "Ducking you? Ducking this?" It was only four words, but they made my eyes sting. "We're here now." "Yeah, we are," he said on a sigh. "Nobody can know." "Well, ouch." But it was hard to blame him. Hiding sucked, and I'd already proven that it didn't really work very well. But on the other hand, I didn't make a very good advertisement for coming out. Nobody would look at me and say, "Heck yeah, sign me up for that media attention." Most gay men who've been around the block a few times will tell you that it's a bad idea to be with somebody who won't acknowledge you in public. Was I willing to be with Graham if I had to sneak around? Actually, it was a pretty easy decision. "Does this mean tonight isn't just a one-time thing?" Graham buried his face in my neck. "It's always been you for me. Always." And now he'd shocked me again tonight. The hits just keep on coming. I couldn't even say anything back, I was just too stunned. But Graham's unlikely affection fed something hungry inside me, so I held him tightly and let my contented sighs tell him how I felt. For a long time we lay there together, tangled up on the bed, and here I'd thought that naked cuddling with Graham was never going to happen. But his big hands continued to warm the skin of my back. He buried his nose in my hair and breathed deeply. "I gotta clean myself up," he said eventually. "Hang tight, I'll bring you a Zamboni." Graham dressed in boxers and a t-shirt and then disappeared into the bathroom. He came back a couple of minutes later, hair damp from a quick shower. I used the warm washcloth he brought back to clean myself up. Then I sat up, pulling on my shirt and my jeans. "Where are you going?" he asked. The vulnerability in his voice was not what I'd expected. I paused, my zipper in my hands,
Well, I have to use the John, which means that I have to use yours or go home. So, which is it going to be?
His eyes traveled to the door. It was after midnight on a Friday night. There were three other rooms on this floor. I could bump into someone in there. Even then, his neighbor would have no reason to suspect us.
I could see him doing the math because it was the same math that I used to do when I was in the closet at St. B's.
Look, I'm putting my shoes on and my jacket. So if someone sees me in your bathroom, they'll just assume that I'm on my way home. You know, after pissing out the beer that real men drink while they watch the game on TV.
He nodded, but I could see the reluctance in his eyes.
I didn't see a soul, I said, when I came back into his room.
Graham lay on the bed in his boxer shorts. His expression was sheepish.
Didn't mean to make a federal case out of it.
I kicked my shoes off and dropped my jacket and jeans over his chair. Then I flopped onto the bed beside him.
Look, I know how it is, but I need you to trust me a little bit. I would never expose you.
His smile was rueful.
You could have outed me on your first day on campus if you felt like it.
Never, I said. Even when you wouldn't look at me, I never wanted to do that.
I've been outed, G. Nobody deserves that.
He propped himself up on an elbow, and I let myself admire the curve of his bicep. Tonight, I was allowed to do that.
Nobody?
He asked. How about that television pastor who preached that gays should all die of AIDS before he got busted for soliciting men in a public bathroom?
Okay, maybe him.
We laughed. But then things got serious again.
If you could undo it, Graham said. If that asshole never outed you at St. B's, would you rather be back in the closet?
Nope, I said immediately. It sucked to be outed because I never got a chance to make that call for myself. But I know who my real friends are, even if there aren't too many of them. There's nobody in my life who doesn't know.
There's nobody who reads the Sports Illustrated website who doesn't know.
I grinned at him.
Okay, so I no longer have even a shred of privacy, but tomorrow when you're skating a little funny, I'll be the only one who knows why.
Graham turned his face away and blushed.
Fuck, I loved that blush.
I scooted closer to him and pulled him into a hug. And he let me. Then we were kissing again. Graham's fingers slid into my hair, and he chuffed out a little satisfied sigh between kisses. It was almost more intense than the fucking. We'd taken the edge off our desire, so this wasn't a frantic let's get naked before I come to my senses moment. Every slide of his lips against mine was loving and deliberate. We made out like two people who had all the time in the world, and every moment of it was delicious. A little later, I set my phone to wake me up at 5 a.m. Then, for the first time in my life, I fell asleep in Graham's arms.
12. First touch. February. First touch. An action which stops the puck so that it may be passed to a teammate. Graham. During the weeks that followed, I could not believe my own luck. Pinch me, I thought to myself as I collapsed into yet another sweaty heap tangled up with Ricker. My body was heavy with the delicious exhaustion that comes from intense sexual gratification. I rested my head on his thigh to catch my breath, but Ricker wriggled out from under me, turned himself the right way around, and dropped his head onto my pillow. He slid one of his muscular thighs between mine, hiked his body closer, and kissed me. It was a lazy, satisfied kiss, just one of hundreds I'd received since we'd become lovers again. Life in the bedroom was very, very good. Of course, in order to accommodate my paranoia, we followed a complicated set of rules at all other times. Under no circumstances would Ricker and I leave Capri's together, for example. Tonight, I'd left after my third beer, drifting out without saying goodbye to anyone. My interest in drinking had plummeted now that my interest in sex had done the opposite. When I'd made it into the Beaumont courtyard, I opened up a messaging app that I used only to communicate with Ricker. Just got home, I sent him. Climbing the stairs, my anticipation began to build. Ricker probably wouldn't answer my text. And some nights, if he was super tired, he didn't show up. Tonight, as always, I'd really hoped he would. After unlocking my room, I always flipped the latch to keep it open. I brushed my teeth in a hurry and then climbed into bed in a t-shirt and boxers. Then I pulled a copy of Sports Illustrated off the bedside table. But I didn't have much patience for reading. My mind was on Ricker, and I hoped like hell that he was on his way up my stairs. Just thinking about him, I usually had to slide my hand down into my boxers and grip myself. Tonight, when I'd heard footsteps on the stairs, I started to stroke. And then, my door opened with Ricker filling it. I watched him click the lock back into position and close the door. Then, he turned to me, and when he saw what I was doing, his eyes flared. "Hands off that," he rasped. "That's mine." I'd complied and then sunk back against the pillows. Ricker dropped his jacket onto my chair, and he hauled his shirt over his head. The sight of his rippling chest made my mouth start to water. I never bothered to watch porn anymore because I had my heart's desire anytime I wanted, right in my own bed. "Take your clothes off," he said. Just the rough sound of his voice was enough to get me fired up. I didn't do it right away because I was busy watching him unbuckle his belt. The jeans fell away from his lean hips, and I could see a prominent bulge in his briefs. "Clothes off, now," he repeated. This time, I'd listened, shedding my t-shirt and my boxers in record time. I was naked against the sheets, with his muscular body stalking toward me. He'd worn a determined look in his eye. "Sexiest thing ever." He put a knee on the bed, and I could have watched his shoulder muscles pop all night as he crawled over me. Those big brown eyes appeared only inches above me, and my whole body tingled, anticipating him. When I was sure I couldn't wait any longer, he dropped his sinful mouth over mine. And we were gone. All rational thought fled as we nipped and licked and manhandled one another. There was nothing like it. And the fact that I'd spent years trying to talk myself out of this was frankly astonishing. Afterwards, we lay entwined, his arms around me. It took a minute or five until we were both breathing normally again. But then Ricker said, "Do you see that slap shot that Trevi bounced off Orson's glove at practice?" I laughed. He was so pissed. "That's because Orson owes Trevi a case of Red Stripe now, because they went double or nothing from last week's bet." I put my head on Ricker's chest, where I could hear the sound of his voice rumbling beneath my ear. The truth was that this part of the night mattered as much to me as the sex. Ricker and I always lay here talking about everything and nothing. Sports, school, whatever. Before, I was so used to being lonely that I'd barely noticed. My teammates were always around, but Ricker was the only person alive who knew my secrets. In bed with him, I talked more freely than I ever did with anyone else. I joked more, I felt lighter. I was in love with Ricker, and had been forever. I didn't tell him, though. I mean, this is me we're talking about here, the usual coward. Ricker would have liked to hear it, I'm sure, and I would have liked to hear it back. But me being me, that wasn't going to happen. He'd love me too, I guess. He'd have to, right? Why else would he stay with my cowardly ass and sneak around like a stalker every time he needed to use the john? In the locker room, he ignored me as I needed him to, and this was my worst sin. When someone made a fag joke, I said nothing at all. That's how I repaid Ricker's nighttime affection during the daylight hours, with my silence. But at night, we held each other. We whispered and laughed, and we kissed until our lips were bruised. We worked our way through a serious stash of condoms and then bought more. In the mornings, he stole out of my room before daybreak. That kind of sucked because I would have liked to wake up next to him. I just didn't want it badly enough to ask him to stay. Meanwhile, the team continued to kick ass. For the first time in 50 years, Harkness was ranked number 2 in the country. With 6 games left in our regular season, there was a good chance we'd go far during the postseason. The first weekend of February, we took a road trip to Cambridge, where we defeated Harvard 5-0 in front of a giant crowd. That felt damned good. When we got back in the bus after a late pizza dinner, Bella sat down beside me. "Hey, Graham. How are you doing?" It took me a second to reply because I was texting Ricker, who was somewhere in the front of the bus. "Good game," I teased him. "Next time you might even score." Because Ricker had a tricky night. All his best shots on goal had been thwarted. "Nice," came his reply, "though there are 2 other ways to score." We used a separate messaging app to talk to each other in case anyone, like Bella, ever looked too closely at my phone. I killed the app, stuffed the phone in my pocket, and turned to her. Sorry, what was the question? She studied me for a moment.
I just asked how you were.
Good, she smirked.
I can see that. A little distracted, maybe?
I just shrugged.
Who is she?
Ah. I gave Bella an innocent smile. What do you mean? There was a silence while she watched me for another long moment.
You aren't drinking so much these days, and you always have your phone in your face. Is it anyone I know?
Again, I just shrugged, which was probably going to infuriate her, but there was no helping it.
Spill, Graham.
Nothing to spill, Bells. She gave me an eye roll, but I wasn't going to feel guilty about this. She hadn't liked it when I was drinking too much, so she should just be happy that I'd stopped, right? It was only fair.
I need to ask, she said, interrupting my thoughts. Is it okay if I put Ricker with you again tonight?
When she'd done that back in the fall, I'd panicked. This time it took all my effort to fight off her grin.
Sure, no problem, I told her.
Thanks, you're a big help.
If that's what you want to call it.
Bella reached into her pocket and handed me a hotel key card.
Room 412, she said.
Got it, thanks. I stuffed the card in my pocket and then changed the subject. What time is breakfast tomorrow?
7:30, unfortunately. Probably half the team will skip it. The bus leaves at 8:30. If you don't want to bother with breakfast, the hotel website says there's free coffee in the lobby.
Good tip, thanks. I took my time getting off the bus. There was really no reason to feel nervous, but my heart rate was elevated just knowing who would be waiting for me in that hotel room. There were days when my secret felt like a weight around my neck, but tonight it just felt hot. In half an hour, while my teammates were watching Sports Night or maybe a little porn on their phones, I'd be getting some. The elevator was full of hockey players, but I was the only one who got off on the fourth floor. Night, Graham, Big D called. Later, I said without a glance over my shoulder. The hallway was empty, which probably meant that Ricker was already in the room. I found number 412 and tapped my card in the scanner. Nothing. I did it again, but the light stayed red. That was only a minor setback, right? I knocked on the door. Then I did it again. I expected to hear Ricker moving to let me in, but there was only silence. Shit. Then I heard the elevator doors open again, and I waited to see if anyone I knew would appear. After a couple of beats of my heart, Ricker strode into view, a smile on his face. Oh, it's you again, I complained. But my smile surely gave me away. Sorry, he said, pulling a key card out of his pocket. Looks like you're stuck with the gay guy. He put his hand on my ass right there in the hallway, and I felt my blood stir. No key? He asked, waving his card in front of the sensor. Didn't work. I must have demagnetized it already. I shoved the door open the moment the light flashed green, and Ricker pushed me inside, his hand on my ass. He threw his duffel onto the floor and then pressed me chest first to the wall beside the bathroom door. He kissed the sensitive skin just below my ear. I made Bella a check with you about sharing a room, wasn't sure you'd want to. I flexed my hips back, pressing my ass into his crotch. On what planet do I not want to share a room with you? He pushed against me. I don't know. The planet where you're thinking of 10 different ways that we could get caught. Ricker reached around my body to slide his hand down the fly of my jeans. He said, tracing the bulge he found there. Maybe you are happy to see me. You think? Putting my forehead on the wall, I angled my crotch into his hand. I was raring to go already. Ricker was the only one who had ever had this effect on me. When he put his hands on my body, I just lit up. And whenever he was a little bit pushy, I was on fire. I made a little pit stop in the hotel shop for supplies. And before you ask, nobody saw me. His chest pressed into my back, and both arms came around me. He went for my belt, and then my zipper. Just the sound of the metal teeth giving way made me breathe faster. And then he wrapped his hand around my dick, and I tipped my head back against his shoulder, telling him without words how much I appreciated it. I know, he whispered, as if I'd spoken. And I like you up against this wall. But I'm looking at a walk-in shower stall in there, and I like that even better. He took a half step backward. How fast can you get naked for me? The answer? Pretty damned fast. We left our clothes in a heap right there on the floor, and it was probably only a minute later when Ricker had the warm water beating down onto his bare chest. I walked into the shower stall and let the glass door close behind me. A second later, a wet, slippery Ricker had me by the hips. "Hands on the wall," he ordered, and I complied. Our life outside the bedroom was organized completely by my rules. No eye contact in the locker room, no texting my ordinary number. But at night, Ricker was the one in charge. He pushed my ass against the tile wall and then dropped to his knees. Before I could even fill my lungs with air, he took me in his mouth. The water ran over his back in rivulets while he worked me over with his tongue. Jesus. A little more of that and I would probably explode. "Oh, damn," I gasped. It was so potent. I was so worked up already. He took me deep and I moaned. "So good. So good," I chanted. Whenever he touched me, I became a live wire. Before, when I had sex with women, I could go for hours. Sometimes I never finished at all. But just the idea of Ricker touching me always had me ready to shoot. "Damn, Ricker," I pumped my hips involuntarily. He released me with a popping sound. "Don't you dare come," he warned. "I've got plans for you." I shoved my hands into his wet hair. "Mmm," he said, nuzzling me. "Did I say you could use your hands yet?" Quickly, I put them on the wall again. He stood up. "Am I fucking you tonight?" Ricker always asked this question, and sometimes I told him no, to give my ass a break. But now he was kissing me so hard that I couldn't answer right away. "Yes," I said eventually. "Yes, what?" he asked, his voice husky. "Yes, doofus?" Sputtering with laughter, he reached down to pinch my ass. "I don't think you have this whole submissive thing down yet. I'll listen better after you make me come. Get on it already." Ricker grabbed me by the hips and turned me around. "Pushy bottom." I heard the crinkle of a condom wrapper. "Spread." He tugged my hips back, angling my ass away from the wall to give him better access. If ever there was a holy shit moment for me, it would be that one. Because you can't bend over in the shower for your gay boyfriend and pretend that your life hasn't totally changed course. But did I freak out just then? No. Because Ricker pressed his hips against me, wrapping his arms around my chest. And I was so turned on that I was practically vibrating. But first, all I got was this full-body hug. And when I turned my head to the side, I could see him in the mirror. The shower was already steaming up the glass walls, but I got a blurry view of him, eyes closed, a look of unconscious, blissful affection on his face. As I watched, he held on tight, kissing me between the shoulder blades and groaning into my back. "I love road trips," he said. I laughed because that was just so easy to do when I was with him. God, I had it so bad for Ricker. Whenever we were alone, the world shrank down to a manageable size. In his company, I became my real self. And it wasn't just the sex. We might be arguing about the NHL entry draft or dining hall food. It was all just right. The shower rained down on us, and I closed my eyes and pressed back against Ricker's body. Groaning with anticipation, he began to stroke me. I wanted him on me, around me, in me, right where he belonged.
Ricker. The next morning I woke up halfway off the hotel bed. I rolled over, or rather I tried to. "You are such a bed hog," I whispered to Graham, who was sleeping spread-eagled on the double bed that we'd ended up sharing. It was so much smaller than the big bed that Graham had rigged up in his dorm room. Graham did not reply, seeing as he was dead to the world. His face was serene, chin tipped up toward the ceiling. In the stillness of our hotel room, I could hear the faintest whistle each time he exhaled. I liked to study Graham when he was sleeping, because only then did he look truly peaceful. But nature called, and it was a luxury to stumble into the hotel bathroom and take a piss without worrying that one of Graham's neighbors would spot me. When I came back out, Graham's phone alarm had gone off in the little docking station he traveled with. It played, naturally, a Clapton tune. Though I'd never admit it, the acoustic version of Layla was a really good song, and kind of sexy, too. Even though it was time to get up, I slid back into bed. Or I tried to. "Move over, hottie," I swatted his big thigh. Without opening his eyes, Graham gave me a sleepy grin, Then he stretched his legs a little wider. So what could I do but climb on him? I maneuvered into position, straddling his sleepy body. The bus leaves in 30 minutes. I'm on the fence about breakfast, but I'm not leaving here until I know you'll get up.
Good of you, he slurred, turning his face away from the light.
I reached up, stroking his cheekbone. He had such a beautiful face, I loved touching it.
Wake up, baby.
His lips twisted.
You are too cheerful in the morning. I don't like it.
I leaned down, dropping kisses onto his hairline. I know better ways to wake you up, but I don't think we have the time.
He said.
His eyes were still closed, but his hips shifted underneath me. At least one part of Graham was properly awake. The feel of him beneath me was divine. Too bad I didn't have a half hour to waste. Sleepy hands rose up to grasp my ribs. I dropped my lips down to his neck, kissing softly along the sensitive skin beneath his ear.
Wake up, I whispered.
He turned his head then, capturing me in a kiss. So sweet. I still got a thrill whenever he made a move on me. It was stupid, really. We were together now in every possible way. But I craved his affection. Every kiss still felt like a gift, because I knew how much they cost him. I sank into Graham's kiss, my hips riding him just enough to probably frustrate the both of us. I was so absorbed in the moment, and in the sound of each breathy exhalation, that I didn't hear the door open.
Graham, I gave you my key by mistake. Had to get another one from the...
Bella's voice died away. Then there was a loud gasp, and then...
Ricker? What the...
Beneath me, Graham went absolutely still. I turned my head to see Bella standing there, her face reddening, her mouth open. I eased off Graham's naked body, giving him time to yank the sheet up higher.
What the fuck are you doing here? He rasped.
That was the wrong thing to say. Bella stood there, a molded tray with 3 coffee cups in one hand.
You,
she stammered.
He.
It was horrible to watch. Her eyes filled with tears, then she took a deep breath.
I was bringing you coffee, you asshole, she said, because I was under the mistaken impression that we were friends.
Bella, I said softly, but then I ran out of words, because there really was nothing else to say on the subject. I put a bed pillow in front of my package and dove for my underwear on the floor. Her face had turned bright red.
This isn't just a fluke, is it?
She sputtered.
You've done this before. God, Graham.
His eyes were squeezed shut, and his face was red, too. Maybe redder than hers. Bella stomped toward the door, turning around once more before she got there.
I thought we were close,
she yelled. And then she turned around and left, the door slamming behind her.
Oh, God. How the hell did she get in here?
Graham covered his face in his hands. She said something about her key. I don't fucking know.
I'm sorry,
I said, hopping into my jeans. I'm going to catch her. You okay with that? Graham just lay there, stunned.
Yeah, I guess.
She's not going to tell anyone, I said as I shoved my feet into my shoes. He just sighed, the weight of the world in it. I put one knee on the bed and a hand on his chest.
Are you okay?
She's pretty pissed.
You know why, right?
Because she loves you. He pinched the bridge of his nose between 2 fingers.
I guess. I'm such an asshole.
No, you're not. Just kind of stupid. I patted him on the hip and then stood up. You're not going to freak out, are you? Another sigh.
Probably not.
Good. Because your very fine ass needs to be on the bus in half an hour. I shoved my stuff into my duffel at warp speed. Can you grab my toiletries when you leave? I don't have time. Bella wasn't hard to catch. When I got to the elevator, she wasn't there. But a quick scan of the lobby revealed a defeated-looking figure on a lonesome bench between 2 ficus trees. She sat there, staring at her shoes, her face blotchy. She didn't look up when I sat down beside her. But she didn't order me to leave, so that was something. Would it be really obnoxious of me to ask right now if one of those coffees was supposed to be for me? Bella practically growled.
I kind of hate you right now.
I know, I whispered.
She took one of the cups out of the tray and handed it to me. Then she took a big slug of another one.
What the fuck, Ricker? How could I be such an idiot?
You're not. She made a face.
It's hard to wrap my head around.
She raked her hands over her forehead.
I mean, I never thought that Graham...
I watched the emotions duke it out on her face.
You went to the same high school for a while.
He said he didn't remember you. She looked up at me for the first time.
That wasn't true, was it?
I cleared my throat. He would have to have a pretty impressive case of amnesia. Bella groaned in frustration.
I'm so pissed at him. It's like we had so many conversations about relationships and sex and our past, you know? We talked all the time.
She dropped her voice.
Graham is gay.
These last words came slowly as if she were trying them on, and I'd still never heard Graham say it out loud.
So then he lied to me for years, she went on. Even last night, I asked who he was texting. I'm offended, okay? Because I would have been cool with the truth, you know? I'm not like that.
I just put my arm around her and let her get it all out.
I knew he didn't love me.
He does love you. She flapped a hand, making the universal sign for enough already.
I don't usually fall for people, and whenever I do, it's a huge disaster.
We have that in common, then. I moved closer to her on the bench.
Come here, would you?
She hesitated, then she leaned in, letting me wrap my arms around her.
I definitely hate you right now,
she said in a small voice. I know.
I hate Graham more.
He's kind of an idiot, I said. She giggled, her face in my neck. But a few tears came along for the ride, too. Bella, for what it's worth, I don't think he ever knew how you felt about him. This was weird, really, comforting my friend because she couldn't have my lover, but whatever.
I never told him, because I knew it wouldn't help. He didn't love me. I just didn't know why. But everything makes so much more sense now. Graham likes guys. That's why he would only have sex drunk, and that's why I always had to work so hard to...
That's TMI. Thankfully, she didn't finish that thought. I didn't want to hear anything about the sex they had. Partly I was jealous, but also I felt protective of poor Graham. For a few minutes I just held her, and then, at the risk of setting her off, I said what I had to say.
Bella, please don't tell anyone.
She jerked away from me, her expression fierce.
Is that why you're being nice to me? So I'll keep his little secret?
I pulled her to me again. No, and you know it. You're my friend. Pretty much my only one. She made an irritated sound, but didn't pull away.
Why does it have to be such a big secret anyway?
Seriously? Do you think I make this look fun? She put her chin on my shoulder.
If everybody came out at once, it wouldn't be a thing anymore.
Dream on. I've been comfy in the closet before, Christian school and all. She looked up at me.
Jesus saves, unless you're gay.
I gave her a squeeze. That's exactly right.
Graham went there for 4 years? She asked.
6, because we did the middle school first. Fire and brimstone and reading, writing, and arithmetic.
God, what a mess.
She sighed, her head dropping onto my shoulder again.
I just can't even...
Her sentences kept starting and stopping, but shock will do that to a person. After a while, though, she seemed to calm down.
What happened between you two before?
I shook my head. Sorry, that's not my story to tell.
Sure it is.
When I shook my head again, her brow furrowed.
It must have been something bad. And that's why you didn't want me to put you in that other hotel room together.